Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It is Monday, June 19th, also known as Juneteenth, celebrating the end of slavery at the end of the Civil War in the United States. Today we have some interesting features for you today. We're going to be starting off with an update, an interview on the current TSSU negotiations with SFU, one of the big issues facing Simon Fraser University and its community right now. We have TSSU shop steward Felix Ruiz de la Orden with me here. Hello.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me.
Great. And we're also going to be have a feature on Japanese artist Yao Sobi from our guest host Ayu, and Peter is here as well. We're going to start the show off, though, with the TSSU. Welcome to the program, Felix.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, the TSSU has been in contract negotiations with SFU actually for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And a couple months ago, the TSSU membership voted overwhelmingly to authorize strike action on the against the university. And the negotiations carried on. But in the last week and a half or so, a lot has happened. And a week ago on Friday, you actually took strike action, or gave the university notification, 72 hours notification of strike action. What led to that decision?
So after the – we had an initial strike vote and SFU challenged that strike vote on the basis that research assistants could not legally go on strike.
Right. So this is the one that happened a couple months ago, where you got 94% support.
Yeah, we got 94% support. We argued that that went against kind of our charter rights as workers to be able to go on strike. But it looked like it would have been a prolonged legal battle for anywhere up to like 6 months or something like that. So we said, you know, this is not really where our power lies. Our power lies in relationships and our organizing capacity. We decided to go to withdraw our strike vote, have expedited bargaining for, I believe it was 3 weeks, and see what happened at the end of that. So that bargaining, just the power of that strike vote alone actually got quite a bit done at the bargaining table. However, we were still at an impasse on many key issues, including getting a cost of living and stuff like increased compensation for more students. When we were still at an impasse after those 3 weeks, we decided to hold a second strike vote, this time with just the teaching support staff. We received 91% mandate to go on strike. And that's where we ended up. We ended up serving strike notice at convocation. Mm-hmm. And now we're here.
So tell me a bit more about serving strike notice at convocation.
It kind of just the timelines ended up just working out that way. We had a member who wanted to do it. We decided to go there. We didn't want to disrupt everyone else's big day, obviously. What we did, we had a member who is graduating, served strike notice to President Joy Johnson. We dropped a banner We did a little cheer, and that was about the end of it.
So this was like right up on the stage.
Yeah.
During one of the ceremonies, and as you say, a fairly sort of brief incident, but captured on, I don't know about video, but I saw a photograph of it, of the actual handover of the strike notice.
And I mean, so we've been kind of, the senior administration has essentially toyed with us for so long. If we want to get anything done in bargaining, it seems like we have to put an incredible amount of pressure. So we were fed up. We know that one of the things that gets to these folks is if you kind of embarrass them.
Right.
So that's what we tried to do and make a big show of it. And it helped with our organizing too, right? So we were able to talk to people that day and let people know what was going on as well.
Right. So a lot of stuff has happened in the last week since then. That was on Friday a week ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot has happened since then. What was the first steps the TSSU took in terms of making that strike action, the action you were taking?
Yeah, so I mean, as 72 hours after serving strike notice, we implemented our first job actions, which were pretty low key. I mean, it's just something to get going and to kind of build up that capacity and that we want. So we started with an overtime ban teach-ins. So teach-ins are essentially, we ask that all the teaching staff before their tutorials or their classes start, spend anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes just talking to their students about what's going on. The idea of that is, we see our students as part of our community as well. We want to keep them in the loop, and it's one way to kind of engage and interact with them. So it was pretty low key, and the university responded by taking away all our members' health care.
Right.
So that includes our extended health plan as well as the paid MSP for international students. We saw this as quite a big escalation.
Mm-hmm.
It happened back in 2015 during the strike then. As senior administration threatened to take away our health care. But this was after around 6 months of prolonged job action as well.
Right.
Yeah. And back then there was, a lot of negative attention from the community as well because it just seems like an egregious, like a really awful escalation to just go and take away. And this came right after the vice president, people, equity, inclusion, also. So the day before, sent out an email saying, if the strike is weighing on you mentally, access our mental health supports, yada, yada, yada. So on the one hand, they claim to care about mental health and the well-being of their community members, and the next day they take away our health care.
Right. And at this point, when they took away your health care, your job action was no overtime and the teach-ins at that point. So
yeah.
You hadn't withdrawn services.
No, not at all.
Okay.
And so we decided that because of this escalation, we needed to respond. I believe, I guess it was 2 days later or a day later on Thursday, we decided to picket the Task 2 building in the Shrum Science Centers.
Right. So CGSF asked the university about making someone available for an interview as well. They haven't done that, but they have been releasing statements throughout the week through their website.
Yeah.
And in their statement online, they have one specifically about the withdrawal of member benefits, which they say, well, here it says here, to be clear, the university has not removed or suspended any benefits from TSSU members. In a strike situation, wages and benefits are typically suspended during periods when employees are on strike and not reporting to work, which is not what was happening at the time that they did this withdrawal. So yeah. They're being a little disingenuous, it seems. Obviously that did not go over well with your members.
No, not at all. I mean, everyone was extremely upset. We spent a team of us, of organizers, ended up going around and talking to people. It seems that benefits would not be withdrawn until July 1st, but we're still in talks with the university to figure out the logistics of that. It is on their part. It is lawful. They have the right to do that, but it's almost never done in these types of labor disputes because it's seen as quite a huge escalation. And President Troy Johnson had been lying about it to people too. Anyone who asked her said that it was all TSSU lies. And I guess after they released that statement, they finally accepted that they did in fact threaten to take away our benefits, and now it turns out Troy Johnson's on vacation, so I guess the heat was too much for her.
So what's happening now? Are you still picketing?
So as of right now, we are not picketing.
Yeah.
We have to kind of come together as the strike committee and figure out the next steps here. Last week we wanted to respond to taking away the health care, and things are moving pretty quick. We'll be talking throughout this week and figuring out our next steps here.
And are you still are talks going on with the university this week?
As far as I know, no. They wanted us to come back to the bargaining table, but we did that last week or 2 weeks ago. Two weeks ago now. They called us back to the bargaining table. And we decided to go back, and they offered us a 0.1 wage increase on their previous one. So we saw it was a complete waste of time, still came nowhere close to a living wage. And we decided, you know what, unless you're serious about bringing forward proposals that we can actually talk about, we don't want to waste our time talking to them.
Right. What are – just remind us of what the issues are in this negotiation and what the TSSU is asking for.
So we're asking for a living wage, job security, and pay tied to the size of a class, right? So and removing equivalencies. So there's a couple of things in how tutorials and classes are structured, where in some departments the same length tutorial is actually paid less than this the same length tutorial in another department, and we're trying to find equity across all departments. And especially since the pandemic, we've seen increased class sizes as well. We want pay tied to the number of students in those classes. So more pay for more work, job security, and a living wage.
Right. In one of its other statements that are posted online, SFU has stated that in response to the TSSU's request and proposals, that it says here, SFU's bargaining team tabled the maximum allowable monetary package under the province's shared recovery mandate. So what they're saying here is they've offered everything as much as they can, and that's it. What's the TSSU's position in response to that?
That's the position they like to take because, you know, they like to make that maximum. We know that they have more money stashed away that they could give us They also take into account, so the way that they kind of discuss monetary issues too, is that, you know, if you get any sort of extra benefit or anything, that gets included in that monetary. And we're saying that, you know, we should be able to have stuff like increased compensation for higher class sizes without that getting taken out of, say, the main wage that we're getting.
So where do you see this? I mean, I'm not asking, where do you see this going from here? Do you feel like this is going to drag on for a while, or do you, hard to tell?
I mean, I hope it's done quickly, because, you know, we're not here as young academics, to be on strike. We want to be teaching. Most of us really love teaching. Most of us love doing research. We'd rather be doing that. So I'm hoping that it doesn't last long, but we'll be out here as long as it takes. And just looking historically at this administration, we do need to put pressure on them to be able to, you know, get anything done. And avoid having some of our most basic rights, like job security, for example, taken away.
Right. So going forward, what can students expect to see?
So I guess students can expect probably more job actions. We do want to work on our, you know, student outreach, especially to undergraduates. We do want them on our side. And so you can also expect probably, you know, a discussion or an organizer coming and talking to you about what's going on.
Right. So in a bit of the issue around the strike vote, SFU wanted to see research assistants not included in that vote?
Yeah.
I know that out at UBC just this spring, last month, research assistants specifically just got authorized to be unionized. Mm-hmm. And they're already included in your union, right, as part of your representation?
Yeah.
Is that part of an issue going forward, more represent? Because it sounds to me, and I want to say I don't know exactly the legalese of all this stuff, you know, because what... what I read about the SFU research assistants is that they're not really employees, but they're sort of in a gray area.
Yeah.
Of, you know, they get money from the university, but they're not necessarily in an ordinary employment situation. I mean, given that you guys represent the research assistants already,
yeah,
and research assistants out at UBC obviously felt the need for protection under a union umbrella. What is the TSSU's position around that?
So,
and maybe a question is, you know, should that status of research assistants maybe be transformed into something more like an employment situation than what is happening now?
Yeah, I mean, our position is that all research assistants are absolutely employees. The university. So when we unionized research assistants back in 2019,
yeah,
we signed over 1,000 union cards. It was clear that research assistants wanted to be part of the TSSU. SFU signed what's called a voluntary recognition agreement, essentially agreeing that research assistants were part of the university. That voluntary recognition agreement said all research assistants and grant employees. So they went back on that agreement and then decided, hey, about half of those research assistants are actually getting paid through scholarship, and they're in a student relationship and not an employment relationship. A lot of these research assistants are producing a tremendous amount of value for the university. A lot of them work in labs that are funded by industry partners. So they're making a lot of money for private companies. They do stuff that contributes to their thesis, but they also do things that contribute to the lab itself and to the principal investigator as well as the university. And so right now, we want to bring research, we want to fight SFU on this, and the best way we can do that is to sign union cards once again, because the law has changed, and if we get 55% of research assistants to sign union cards, right, they automatically become certified bargaining unit members, right, and SFU, and that will fall under the jurisdiction of the labor board, and will finally come to a determination. So if you're a research assistant, you should come by the TSSU office and sign a union card.
Okay. One other thing to raise just before we finish up here, because in SFU's statement posted online on Saturday, they make mention of received reports from members of the university community concerned about certain behaviors at picket lines. And then they go on to say that harassment and intimidation is never acceptable at SFU, and the university is addressing reports of inappropriate behavior at the picket lines. So what's your response to that, and do you know what they're talking about?
So it was clear to me that this is obviously was their plan should pickets come, is to stir up a lot of confusion. So their initial communications encouraged people to cross the picket line. There were professors who held classes and told their students that they had to cross the picket line. Picket lines are not, they are a political act. They're causing kind of, they're a real kind of material act as well. Mm-hmm. When our members were talking to people trying to cross the picket line, they started sending out emails saying, you know, report any quote unquote intimidation and coercion. We think that's, their way of trying to invalidate us, and we reject that.
Right. All right. Well, I guess just a quick recap. So you're not currently picketing?
No, not at the moment.
there aren't talks ongoing right now,
yeah,
at this moment with the university. And what job action are you currently taking?
So the overtime ban is still in effect, and we will be continuing with the teach-ins as well,
right,
as we determine the next steps. But like I said earlier, things are moving fast. So keep an eye, like if you're a TSSU member, SFU community member, keep an eye out on communications.
Right.
We'll be communicating, you know, any next steps.
All right. And where can your own members, TSSU members, but also other members of the university community and students find out more about TSSU positions?
Yeah, so you could go to bargaining.tssu.ca,
yeah,
or our main website, tssu.ca.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And the university statements are also online. They're very easy to find by just Googling SFU statement on TSSU, and they come up as the first results. I won't give you complicated URLs for that. So if you want to learn more about what's happening with the strike and how it may or may not affect you, it's easy to find out. And we'll be having Felix here back on the radio probably soon when once there are further developments or hopefully perhaps a resolution before long.
Yeah.
Felix Ruiz de la Orden is Chief Steward of the Teaching Staff Support Union at SFU or the TSSU. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
And good luck with the current negotiations, and let's all hope for a fast resolution, because that's everybody wins with that.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
You're listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with an artist profile with Ayu, who's going to bring us an artist profile of the Japanese performer Yo Asabi. Yeah. We'll We'll get the proper pronunciation from her. I'm doing my best here. First, though, this is a bird note.
This is bird note.
Thanks, Felix.
The modern chicken, a descendant of the red jungle fowl, was domesticated thousands of years ago. But chickens haven't always just been farm animals. During the Iron Age, the rooster's morning call became a symbol for chickens' divine connection to the sun. In the city of Babylon, which is in modern-day Iraq, historical illustrations show priests worshipping chickens set upon pedestals. In the Zoroastrian religion and in Greek mythology, chickens were considered sacred, responsible for bringing light to the world. When chickens made their way to Europe, they were considered exotic and even holy. Julius Caesar wrote that the Britons consider it contrary to divine law to eat the hare, the chicken, or the goose. Archaeologists even found some of the first chickens in Europe buried alongside people. In the Roman Empire, chickens were farmed and eaten. But when the population fell around BCE 400, they regained their divine status. In the 9th century, Pope Nicholas I ordered that rooster figures be placed atop church steeples in honor of the many biblical references to the species. Today, the chicken's sacred status lives on in artwork, in holiday traditions, and in our admiration for these common but fascinating creatures. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Eves Jarvis and a track called At the Whims. That's from his album The Zug, which came out almost a year ago, up in last summer. and he's a Canadian artist. All right, joining me is Ayu Sakamoto.
Hi.
Thanks for being part of the show, and we're going to do another